right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about the really, really creepy movie, Smile, which is out in theaters right now. Joining me to talk about it is Daniel Berrios from the Movies Podcast. And we've got a lot of great puzzle pieces to talk about with this one. A lot of good stuff, a lot of interesting things, a lot of creepy shit. But that's coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you're listening. And if where you're listening happens to have a five-star button, we'd appreciate it if you hit that five-star button and maybe drop a little review. If you're listening on Good Pods, you can also comment right on the episode and let us know if there's any puzzle pieces we might have missed. So do that. We'd love to hear from you. So other than that, make sure you're following us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And let's talk about Smile. All right, Daniel from the Movies is back with us after, of course, talking about Morbius earlier this year. This time around, though, maybe we're going to do some jump scares. What do you think, Daniel? Does that sound like a good idea?
I'm just being spooked out over here, man.
Is there a movie this year with more jump scares than this movie we're about to talk about?
Arguably Morbius.
Yeah, that's true.
Morbius might have had more of Jared Leto going, ah!
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, good point. Good point. This movie, Smile, everybody was like super psyched by the trailer, even though it kind of just looked like a run-of-the-mill-ish horror movie. It just had that one great moment with the head spin thing, and I think that kind of got people talking, and sometimes that's all you need to kind of separate yourself apart from the pack, I feel like, and it kind of worked, because I mean, look, we're talking about this a week after its release, and it's still probably going to be the number one movie the second weekend in a row.
Yeah, Paramount, I mean, say what you want about them, they've been doing fantastic this year, and it's not just on like the Top Gun front, not on the big blockbuster. They've been doing great with everything they've put out. Could be Lost City, this, Top Gun, like all around the board. Hell, even the new thing on the internet is the Blue's Clues trailer, the Blue's Clues No Way Home thing, where everybody's kind of invested in that now because, you know, of the generational appeal of that. So yeah, kudos to Paramount for dropping some specifically like great marketing on this thing. That first teaser where it's just, you know, the girl smiling, staring straight in the camera, that's a eye grabber. People at baseball games being hired to just stare creepily into the camera. You know,
amazing stuff.
Say what you will about the movie, the marketing for this has been phenomenal. And I think the fact that it's not Saw 17 or like part of the Conjuring universe where they try to shoehorn that in is just kind of its own thing, even if it does borrow so much from other movies that we're about to talk about here. I think that's just refreshing enough for audiences to go ahead and step out and give it the first spooky season run of the year.
Absolutely. Well, before we start getting into the puzzle pieces, one more thing. Are you yourself scared of creepy smiles? Like overindulgent, like big smiles? Because I'll tell you, I am scared shitless of them. Like, I think they're very, very... And so this movie was like just seemed like it was like... set to affect me in a way, you know?
I've noticed that. I'm not particularly, because I think I'm the one that does the creepy smiling. Like, I will straight up, like, look at people across the room. Like, if I'm trying to get your attention and I've already kind of said my piece, I'll just straight up stare and, like, do the whole overly attached girlfriend meme where it's just like the... and hold it and just wait for somebody to show up.
Eye contact is a good thing most of the time. When attached to a creepy smile, then it kind of, you know.
I think it's one of those things where, like, you're going down the street and, like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to live in Chicago, and we'd go to the zoo sometimes, and then you're, like, walking in the crowd, and it's that one person that you see, like, a little too many times, and it's that person that, like, they might be smiling, but you don't know what their intentions are behind that thing. I think that's where this movie is really like, when it really works that way. But no, if people creepily smile at you, I've always been the one to just creepily smile back and see who breaks first.
It's a good plan. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to do that next time. But right on. Let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first one?
Do we start with the obvious? Or do I, you know what? Let's start with the obvious, this one. The first thing I said when I stepped out of this was, this is the like Paramount's version of It Follows. You know,
Sure.
It Follows, if you don't know, follows a teenager played by Michael Monroe that after a sexual encounter with a new fling finds herself tied to a chair where the new fling explains to her what's going on. That like, look, this thing is coming after you. It can look like anybody that you know. It can look like anyone, whether you know them, whether you don't. And it doesn't breathe, it doesn't like eat, it won't stop until it gets you. The only way you can save yourself is by passing down this curse to the next person you have sex with. And so that on its surface is like a really like stupid idea for a movie, but in it the movie just goes into these big it kind of touches on sexual assault. It touches on the way that women perceive themselves as like sexual beings, and it's just this discomfort that's felt throughout this thing. And the claustrophobia of It Follows is something that's just masterfully achieved. A disaster piece score, which is one of the best scores of that year. He also did Bodies, Bodies, Bodies this year, another movie which I absolutely adored. But just that eerie synthy Carpenter esque thing that's like gearing in the background. I heard some of that stuff in Smile, the curse that kind of follows you around. There is a way to circumvent the curse, which has some morally disturbing implications. And that feeling that it can look like anybody that you know, that it's sort of a shape-shifting demon thing too. And the fact that the movie spends a decent amount of time letting you see how this stuff affects the main character. It's not that they're all about the investigation and It Follows. It's mostly about her like letting the weight of what's happening sink in, the way that people look at her, her friends, her family. I think it's her sister and It Follows. She's kind of weirded out by what's going on. And there's a little bit of horror. There's a little bit of just personal trauma. Some jump scares in It Follows that really, really work. And not necessarily because it's the jump, it's more the disturbing feeling. Like my favorite one is like she's in the bathroom after it's happened and she first finds out, and she's just looking at her body in the mirror and just that weird discomfort, that kind of like, oh God, what have I done? Like, what am I, how do I feel about myself now? And then boom, like some neighbor hits the window with a ball. And it's the neighbor hitting the window with a ball is like a dumb jump scare, but it's that feeling that she has about all of this and the way she sees herself. Just that movie, I love it to death. And it Smile reminded me so much of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great first piece. And I think definitely one of the biggest, like most obvious ones. My first one is also going to be one of the biggest, most obvious ones. But, you know, talking about that score, that's another thing I loved about Smile. I thought the score was fantastic. Different kind of score, not like the synth heavy type of score that It Follows has, but equally effective. And I found very memorable. One of my favorites this year. The main thing of It Follows, I feel like, has been that it's been super influential in a way. Like, you know, as far as like recent movies that have inspired a lot of things after it, like that, and maybe like one or two A24 films or something have been like the most influential of like the last five, 10 years, I feel like. And It Follows comes up so much. It's a great one, and it definitely fits here. The other, I think, biggest obvious one would then be The Ring, which I'll use as my first puzzle piece, and kind of goes along with a lot of what we're talking about there with It Follows, with the implications of how to get this curse off of you, with it like it basically has to be transferred to the next person. And again, like lots of creepy imagery, but it kind of, the scares come more from just the effects of what this does to the people. It's not so much that you know, that it's not a slasher movie or anything like that. It's just, it really fucks with the people that this is happening to. And you kind of put yourself in those shoes and imagine just how terrified and how awful it would be to have been affected by this thing. And just knowing that you have less than a week and it's just going to be horrific and awful and insanely just terrible. All three of these movies kind of give you that same feeling of like, there's just no escaping this thing.
Yeah. The great thing about The Ring is that you never really settle into the world. There are some horror movies like, hell, even Nightmare or some of the Fridays, like you kind of know what you're getting into. You kind of know what's going to be around the corner. In any sense, it's going to be Freddy's in a dream or Jason's like the one sneaking around that's killing people in the woods. The Ring is one of those where you don't know where the creepiness is going to come from. You don't know if it's going to be like an image from the VHS. You don't know if it's going to be the way that just Naomi Watts is sitting there and like thinking about how this horrific stuff is going to happen to her. Every development of that mystery gets weirder in a different way. And that's one thing I put above Smile is that I think the way the mystery unfolds in The Ring is great, whereas in Smile, it tends to be in my brain a lot of, I watched this woman commit suicide. I wonder what happened to her. Oh, she watched another guy commit suicide. And then like 20 minutes later, oh, it turns out the person that she had seen had also had the same thing happen to her. And it doesn't really go until kind of later in the movie where you get that little divergence in the mystery where it kind of expounds upon itself and like basically expands what's going on. So I'll put that above it. But the idea that the paranoia of what's going on to you is really the scariest thing that's going on, that to me is that's a great thing to basically borrow. Like borrow, you know, what did they say? Great artists steal from each other. Like if you're going to steal from something, steal like really good paranoia from The Ring.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. One other thing about that, actually, while we're on that, something that I feel like all three of these movies do that is very difficult to balance and works really well in all three of these movies is that feeling of like, there's really not a good explanation for how or why any of this is manifesting in the way that it does. You know, like yes,
and
there's
God
a
bless
demon
it
here.
For it.
Yeah, like you know, why can this demon do this? I don't know,
it's
but it's scary
demon.
Shit, isn't it?
Like what? like what the fuck? You're gonna go into a library, you're gonna open up a book on demonology and immediately understand how it's gonna go down. Like what, you're gonna call fucking
that would be the worst version.
You're gonna call
the
fucking Ghostbusters or something? No, it's a demon, man.
Yep. Exactly.
If we have to believe in an afterlife that's infinite, there's infinite possibilities of what this thing can fucking do. And so God seeking out logic and plot holes wherever you go, it's death to a film. It's death to personality in a film too. Like God, the idea that you can take a metaphor and, you know, expound upon that and kind of put your own weird brain and the things that freak you out into it. If you have to apply logic to all of that too, what a boring movie this would all be.
Absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
I'm going with more of the character stuff. The Invisible Man, the remake couple years ago with Elizabeth Moss. And specifically, I've noticed, and actually, I'll save that part for another puzzle piece that's adjacent puzzle piece, The Gift, Joel Edgerton's thing. And specifically, this sort of Hitchcockian thing of just like putting people off center in the frame, letting a lot of windows be part of your production design so you can see in every corner, try to figure out where this thing is. So Invisible Man had a really good way of just like capturing the environment, and Smile is borrowing from that too, trying to get you to look in the hallways, look far in the window, to the side, to the corner. Anybody that's standing straight that doesn't quite fit in the frame properly, that's where your eye is supposed to go. And more for the character wise, like Sosie Bacon's Rose is slowly turned. I think Elizabeth Moss is already like where Sosie Bacon is halfway in the movie, but Elizabeth Moss is there in the beginning of the movie. But sure, you get to see that transformation of how this feeling of not being taken seriously is really starting to fuck with her and really starting to make her potentially, like, she doesn't want to believe that she's crazy. And especially Sosie Bacon does this thing where, because she's a therapist and she's supposed to be on top of her game, hell, you even hear the first victim, Laura, saying, like, don't look at me like I'm crazy, I have a PhD. Which, on one hand, is like a commentary about, like, look, mental illness can affect all of us. It doesn't mean that because you're not of, like, a college-educated mind that you can't deal with some fucked up shit in your head, too. Great commentary on that end. But that insistence of, like, no, you have to believe me. I am a logical, rational person. This is happening to me. I can explain it to you. You're not going to believe it from your perspective, but trust me here. That insistence and that perseverance, despite, you know, the trauma and the mania that comes with dealing from this shit, I think is very parallel to what Elizabeth Moss is doing in that film.
Absolutely. Great piece. And The Invisible Man is fantastic. I actually never saw The Gift, but I may have to watch that one of these days.
That's a cool fucking movie.
Yeah. Joel Edgerton is great. And I mean, I think, is that the only thing he's directed so far? Or did he do something else?
He did a gay conversion camp movie it's Boy Erased with, I think, himself, Kidman, and Lucas Hedges. I think he dropped that in 2018. But The Gift is just a fantastic paranoid thriller. Jason Bateman and God, an amazing Rebecca Hall in it. If you want like a really great Rebecca Hall performance, you got to watch The Gift. And there's an ending to that that's just a motherfucker. It's a great twist.
The secret is that they're all amazing performances with Rebecca Hall. But absolutely.
Hamstring.
I'll go to my next piece, which is to say that this is the better version of M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. Night Shyamalan's The Happening started with a great premise of this suicide that passes from person to person and people just keep killing themselves. And then, unfortunately, the explanation comes. Speaking of having to over-explain everything, with nature and whatever nonsense that was, I think I've blocked out most of the explanation at this point. But it's definitely one of the worst ones. Although I am back on the M. Night Shyamalan train ever since Old. I love that movie, and I can't wait to see his new one. But The Happening did not work very well. But it did start with this great premise, and it is kind of the same basic premise that we have here with Smile, you know, add in some creepy smiles. But the idea that once somebody commits suicide, it kind of passes on to the next person who then commits suicide. Of course, as we find out later in the movie, it's not really suicide. It's this demon, doing its thing. But, for all intents and purposes.
Haven't seen The Happening. Basically, I've avoided it because of everybody that told me it was dog shit. I do like M. Night Shyamalan. Actually, I just watched Sixth Sense for the first time this year.
Oh, wow.
And that was really fucking cool. Nobody told me how sad that movie was, by the way. Like, everyone was talking about the twist, but nobody told me how much of a fucking bummer and how, like, depressed I would be at the end of the thing.
Yeah.
And
it's heartbreaking,
the whole, if you over-explain the thing, it's just, I don't know. I think you open yourself up to like a different kind of movie. Like try to explain a Lynch piece or try to explain like some like surrealist shit. If you try to dig too deep into the logic, I think you lose sort of the id-fueled primal brains, like some weird cosmic connected to the universe thing that we have. It's the secret sauce in the art, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Stop trying to explain your movie. Just let it sit there.
Absolutely.
Don't cinema sins yourself, man.
As long as we're talking about art, I'm going to throw in a little bonus puzzle piece. It's not really a full piece. So let's jump to the end, and then we'll jump all around, of course. But at the end, when this demon reveals itself, and it's this big, gigantic, insane, like, monster with mouths, and then it shoves itself into our main character's mouth, basically. That scene And maybe I'm far off, but it reminded me of Goya's Saturn devouring his son's painting, like in reverse.
Oh yeah, you know, so I don't know, obviously not a movie here,
just a kind of like bonus extra piece, but like it just, it was something that came to mind for me, and I wonder if that was intentional.
That's gotta be a little bit, because that shit, it, like the Renaissance demonic paintings, that shit is horrific. And yeah. God, if we're talking about Smile, like, look, you're probably like way brighter on this thing than I am. Really, the mystery thing just kind of bogged me down. But that last 15 minutes is a fucking showstopper. And that special effect is great.
Oh, yeah.
Like watching like Sosie Bacon's mouth just like open up and this person slipping on, like you're trying to put on like a, I have this onesie that I got from Christmas. And I feel like that's what this demon's trying to do, like stretch the legs in and get it right. Like a literal skinwalker thing. Man, that was such a freaking cool effect. Yeah, that's a great puzzle piece.
Right on, right on. Glad you like that one. What do you got for your next one?
I'm gonna do like a detour mini puzzle piece. That part in Smile, whenever they go to the professor's house, he's an art professor, and he starts like drawing all the shit on the walls that like freaked him the hell out. Kind of reminded me of Devil's Candy. There's this movie called The Devil's Candy, which is it's starring Ethan Embry. And he's this artist slash like real big metalhead that moves out to this new house, this farmhouse somewhere. He's got a wife and a daughter, and the daughter's like 12 years old, and she's a great fucking metalhead. Like her idea of easy listening is Metallica's For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is fantastic. And whenever he goes to this house, the history of the house is somebody killed their parents in it. And every time they killed them, they started like playing this guitar, but like this weird droney death metal thing. And so whenever the artist goes to his studio to work this stuff out, he's like visited by the spirit of that evil that happened there. And so he like draws all this crazy shit that ends up being like, fodder for the movie later. But the way that stuff was drawn, the more like hellish imagery, again, the Goya thing was really what brought it to mind, like these fiery reds and yellows and blacks and whatnot, just this really disturbing imagery on its own. It kind of reminded me of that scene where you see the professor, just the teeth in the night, that weird smile, just
I don't think I know this movie. I need to watch this. This sounds really great.
It's really good.
Yeah, I just Googled it, and it looks like the artwork and everything. It just looks fantastic. I got to watch this.
No, if you're into metal and you're into horror movies like slashers and one, I really think it's one of those great ones where you really care about the characters too. Like whenever any of your characters are in peril, that really hurts you. The relationship between Ethan Embry and the daughter is perfect. Just, that movie is an underrated fucking gem from last, I think it's 2016, 2015. I found it on Netflix randomly and fell in love with it.
Nice. I'm going to have to watch that for sure. I'll go with another one. I'm going to cheat a little bit and go with something I've never actually seen. But as long as this is kind of a small piece, but the Blumhouse film Truth or Dare, which also
saw that
over exaggerated smiles. I hated the 4 months or so when I had to go to the movie theater and see that trailer. As I said, I'm scared of big smiles. So I never wanted to see that. I saw this one though because it looked good. So.
Truth or Dare, that was fun fact. The day we were supposed to go see Truth or Dare, I was doing a collaboration with some friends for a YouTube thing. And before that, we were going to go see Isle of Dogs. So I had the day off. My buddies were going to pick me up, and then they were going to drop me off at the other movie theater. So I wasn't driving at all. So it's around 3 o'clock. I'm 4 shots of vodka in. I take like another one for the road. We're driving to Isle of Dogs and we get T-boned by a Tahoe. Oh. My friend's Mustang is totaled. There's like a dent in the sign because it wasn't like that fast. I think it was something where like somebody misjudged like a yellow or whatnot. And so it wasn't that bad of a hit. But I remember because my buddy has like a two-door, I'm sitting in the back seat just waiting for this thing to slow down. Like, my one friend jumped out already. My guy who was driving, one of my friends, he had like a little like concussion or whatnot. So he was just like, hey, bro, are you okay? And I'm just kind of sitting there in the back, like relaxed, just going like, dude, get out. Like, I'm just going to wait for this thing. I'm telling you, the Mustang is crawling to a stop. But my guy's like sitting like over the front seat, just like making sure I'm okay. I'm like, leave. And so I sit there. I wait for this thing to go, boop, leave. Deal with all the hospital stuff, whatever. I'm totally fine. I ended up finding like a couple shards of glass in my mouth a little bit later, but that was fine. And then we go see Truth or Dare. And I remember my opening line in the review I did with my buddies was, today I got in a car accident and that was less traumatic than watching Truth or Dare, because that movie is absolutely god awful. It's just one of those like brain dead horror films. It's one of those things that goes right in your ear and eye and just leaves immediately. The only thing I really remember is I think they might have pulled some racist stuff with the one like Asian kid. It's the stereotypical like the Asian kid dishonoring his dad trope, and it was done pretty lazily. But the smiles got hilarious. It wasn't even like Smile. At least in Smile, there's an understanding of tension. Like that really great when she's on the phone with the security company. And that shot from like behind her head where it's fully in frame. And because you've already seen the creepy smile in frame facing you before, you're like waiting for that jump scare to twist. That tension is great. There's absolutely none of that in Truth or Dare. I just remember like drunk dudes dancing on like a table and my car accident. And that was it.
That's a great story. I'm glad you're okay. And I'm glad you got to see Truth or Dare so you could explain it to me a little bit. Since I never saw it. But
it was awful.
Let's move away from Truth or Dare. What do you have for your next piece?
My next one is going to be David Sandberg's Lights Out. And specifically because it's a movie that relies on that. It's a movie with a gimmick. And it sticks to the gimmick so hard. And it rides that gimmick till the very end. You know, when the lights are out, you can see the silhouette. You can see the demon. That's when it's coming after you. And so the rest of the movie is almost answering the question, okay, how do we make this scary? How do we make this interesting? How do we make this fun? And Smile is kind of doing some of that, where it's like, okay, you got these weird smiling people. What are you going to do? We're going to put them in the background. We're going to put them like in the midst of a crowd. If you're smiling, you don't trust anybody. You're looking through everyone in that birthday party. And as soon as you see one weirdo smile, it freezes you in your tracks. We're going to put that weird pain chart in the hospital where it says, describe your pain from 0 to 10. And we're going to zoom in on that smiley face in 0 just because it's going to weird you the shit out. and I think Lights Out does this like with a lot more panache. And again, I don't know how much of this is due to budgetary things. I know that Parker Finn developed this from his short that Laura Hasn't Slept from South By a couple years ago. And from what I heard, this was supposed to be a Paramount Plus only release. And then the test screenings went so well that they just had to move it to theaters. So I don't know how much support there was for like really like letting him go crazy like he does in the last 15 minutes. But I loved how in Lights Out, like there's the buzzing of the neon in the lady's room, and then you could see the thing. Whenever the cops are going after this thing, the flashes from the gun muzzle temporarily hide the person. The boyfriend is like being choked and he turns on his car headlights and then it drops him. You know, that kind of stuff is creative and it's a lot of fun and things that you don't immediately associate with like a horror movie, but it's fun for the gimmick. And so specifically for like a movie that hangs on to its gimmick and really wants to squeeze every last ounce of it, I really like Lights Out for that reason. And it, when you watch Smile, it reminds me of the same thing.
A lot of those things could be applied back to The Invisible Man as well, which I think plays with a lot of those kind of visual like tricks and like just like playing with what you're seeing on the screen and what the characters are dealing with. If I'm not mistaken, in Lights Out, there's like a demon at the end too, right? Like where you're seeing everything but that up until that point, and then you finally see it.
Yeah, it's like a weird, if this has been a long time, I think it's like science fiction gone wrong,
mm-hmm.
partially, because there's like two girls. There's the regular one who's the blonde one who ends up being, I think, the main character's mom. And then the other one who was like experimented on, she has this disease where she doesn't affect to light well. And I think the lady was betrayed or some shit like that. And so she's going after the daughter. So I'm not totally sure that it's a demon, but again, it's one of those things where like by that point, you're so into the gimmick. It doesn't really matter what like scientific mumbo jumbo they do to like this.
Sure.
Like if you like Lights Out, you like Malignant. I can't live in a world where you don't like both those movies because you just really don't care. You're there for the vibes. You're there for the fun.
Yeah. And he directed some of the Conjuring spinoffs, didn't he?
Annabelle Creation. Yeah.
Yeah. And and of course now is doing the Shazam movies. I'm sure Parker Finn, this is his first feature, so I'm sure he'll be doing a superhero thing soon enough.
Parker Finn for Blade, wait on it.
Let's do it. Why not? Yeah. Let's do it. I will go with Drag Me to Hell, which by the way, earlier today I recorded an episode on Barbarian. And also use Drag Me to Hell as a puzzle piece.
Oh, fuck. I need to watch that movie so bad. You don't understand. I listen to other podcasts and they're like, I saw Barbarian, and I'll shut the volume down.
Yeah.
Like, everything I know is that it starts on one level and it goes down. And that's it. That's all I got. I've avoided the internet well enough for this shit. But yeah, I need to finally get off my ass and go watch Barbarian because that sounds like a fucking fun ass time.
You gotta watch it. And I'm not going to talk right now about how Drag Me to Hell applies to Barbarian. But as far as here with Smile, I mean, I think there's definitely Raimi influence here. What horror movie lately doesn't have Raimi influence? But I mean, really just how bananas things get once we get to the end and we see that creature in like this big old hag creature basically and this unshakable curse. And another thing is the ending, seeing our main character basically succumb to the curse through the eyes of the love interest, through the ex-boyfriend cop, which kind of like Justin Long is who's witnessing the main character die at the end of Drag Me to Hell. So, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things once we get to that third act that start to like, we go in almost in a Malignant kind of way. We go from a straight up horror movie to just a crazy balls to the wall horror movie once we get to the end, you know?
Yeah, no, I can completely see where you're going with that. I wouldn't say it's like as like openly silly as a Raimi movie. I think because they are really focusing on sort of the there's that whole section of the movie that's about Rose's trauma and the guilt she feels over like being a child and not like taking responsibility for her mother. And which is, you know, it's a toxic flaw in and of itself because, you know, you're not supposed to be responsible for somebody else's life. Like, you're not supposed to be responsible for your parents' life. That's it just is. Like, if they don't make that decision to live for themselves, then, you know, you can't do it for them. But the ending, the way that it gets weird and like the distorted faces that like come at you towards the screen, it looks almost like a like one of those weird clowns out of like a Scooby-Doo movie just coming at you. It feels very silly Raimi to me. But that's a good
exactly.
One.
Yeah, they hold on to it until the very end and then they just like leave you, they get you leaving the theater with just like a wow, that was fun, like in those last like 15-20 minutes, you know? So
it's like a good showstopper at the end of a haunted house, you know?
Exactly.
if you leave a haunted house with a great like boom scare, that's like what you remember, right? So
solid. Exactly. So what do you got next?
Let me go. The more I think about this one, have you ever seen this documentary called The Nightmare?
No.
There's a documentary called The Nightmare that's about sleep paralysis, and it kind of links together these six people talking about their experiences and how they're all kind of seeing the same thing in their dreams. Mm-hmm. And something about the way Smile had that sort of communal experience around it, like the scene where she visits Rob Morgan in jail, and immediately, like, they both have this, like, even though they don't explicitly say it until the very end, they both kind of have this understanding of how this thing works and feels. The Nightmare does like these recreations, these like reinventions or imaginings or whatever of the sleep paralysis demon. And you'll hear the person talking about it in their voiceover and the way things smile. Like, I'm brought back to the art professor where all he saw was just like that mouth smiling in the dark, that like paralyzing fear. You can't escape it. It's not really coming after you. It's not like pouncing on you. It's just leering over you. And it kind of like, there's this feeling that it's like, it's all in your head type of thing, because, you know, because sleep paralysis affects people like individually. It's not like it's a thing you can experience unless you've yourself have experienced it. You can't experience it for somebody else, basically. And so that feeling of not
I've
being
had
taken
it once.
Seriously. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I didn't see a demon, but
I saw a guy with a hat. Like
what the
some
fuck?
Kind of
everybody says that.
Yeah, everybody it's so weird.
Yeah,
it was very, very weird. I remember posting on Facebook about it. I didn't even know what that was at the time, and I posted on Facebook about it. This was like 5-6 years ago or something like that. And I was like in the dream. I was sleeping in bed. I was an adult, but I was sleeping in bed with my parents. And this guy in a hat came to the edge of the bed, and we were just. Me and my parents were just not scared. We were just like, oh, that's weird that there's a guy in a hat at the foot of the bed. Just like, just totally calm and just like out of it. And yeah, and I woke up and everyone was like, yeah, you just were visited by a demon. And I was like, oh,
what
fuck.
The fuck? No, that's what the whole movie is, though. It's like these six people sharing. And my wife has talked about the top hat. Mine is... And I don't know if this is just the way I slept. Like, I wake up, half of my bed is on the pillow, and half of my head is on the pillow because I can see out of one eye. But for some reason, I can't move the rest of my body. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like you can feel your brain sending the signal. But it's almost like if this is the lever that controls your arm, the signal's just like not quite getting there.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there like, okay, I know I can make myself move. Like move, like you can't like position yourself. It's just stuck in your head. And so it was like that for like a solid 5 minutes, and it freaked me the hell out. Haven't seen a demon, and I'm pretty sure I was awake. Like, I'm pretty sure this was morning time, but like that feeling of like initially being like conscious and not being able to move your own body is something just like on another level. And
so weird. But yeah, that documentary sounds really good, actually. It sounds really interesting, especially because I've experienced something like that. And to the movie itself, like using it as a puzzle piece, I mean, these people have all experienced this thing that's like really unexplainable. No one else could possibly understand it. And that really does become like a big part of it. So, I mean, it makes total sense here as a puzzle piece. So I like that. I'm gonna throw in another kind of simple-ish one, but I was thinking a lot, especially every time we see the results of one of these supposed suicides, of the opening scene of Midsommar, with the sister's suicide, which is just horrific, you know, and it's just this big long close-up of this post-dying suicide by suicide body, the big horrific score, just using that imagery to really just unsettle you and put you in a bad place, you know, and over again here as it travels from person to person, you know?
Yeah, you know, I thought you were going to go with Final Destination on it just because Final Destination has that, like, I think it's the variety of kills thing. But yeah, as you mentioned, the opening scene of Midsommar is just that sinking, gross, just...
Yeah.
It's like Final Destination for somebody who, like, wants to shame you for having fun. It's like somebody who's, like, watching people enjoy Final Destination and being like, you are disturbing people, and this is why. It's just like, God, man. Come on.
We're so desensitized with all these movies, but that is one that I watched and was like, ugh. Cut away from this soon, please. You know,
it's just there's no like horror movie in it. You know, it's not like a movie. It's like you're watching. It feels partially like you're watching a snuff film. And I think it's just the elaborate nature of it. The idea that this was orchestrated And it feels like more like a David Fincher 7 reveal more than like a Final Destination reveal. Yeah. And even then, 7 is so like outwardly and like intensely grimy that it feels like an aesthetic choice. Whereas this one just feels like you stumbled upon like the worst day of somebody's life. It's just
absolutely. Well, I only have one more piece left. What do you have any more left?
I got one. Like, cool. There's a part of me that, again, I harp on the mystery thing and the sort of repetitiveness of it because the movie's like 1:50. And there's a part where I'm just like, okay, I kind of know where this thing is going. Like, I really need to slow down. There's a part of me that's like, okay, I either want this to be like really, really good, like It Follows, or I want it to be dumber. Like, there's a part of me that when she first loses the cat and you like open the, what's it called? The birthday present. I wanted that cat to be smiling.
I thought that was going to happen 100%.
Either that or the cat is mangled. No, when the kid pulls out the cat, I'm like, wait, that's the toy my son has. We bought him like this animatronic cat that they normally use for dementia patients, but you can get it cheap at like toy stores and thrift shops anywhere. And so I'm like, yeah, that's what that cat is. That's not scary at all. But yeah, I wanted the idea of wanting it to be dumber has linked me into like, I love Countdown, the killer app curse movie. That movie is so deliciously stupid. And whenever they like break down the whole, like, how do you fix this curse? Well, no, of course, you just go into the code of the app and you find this weird enchanted Latin inside of it and take it to a priest and fucking read it.
That's amazing.
You got like Tom Segura not giving a shit as like the Radio Shack owner or whatever. And just the silliness of that movie and just the commitment to silliness is something that I really kind of missed from this movie. But when this movie does get silly like that, it's kind of like, oh, you know, that's fun. I want to go there. Yeah, no, Countdown. You're being followed by this weird curse and you can't get rid of it, and everything you do to try to get rid of it ends up like screwing you over in the end, but it's like dumb and silly and just I like it.
That's hilarious. I do wonder how much like this movie would have gotten that, again, to bring up Barbarian, it would have, you know, this year's Barbarian like excitement level that so many people have had. Would this movie have gotten that same kind of excitement if this movie was sillier or more just kind of crowd pleasing rather than, you know, it is pretty damn dark for at least, you know, the first two acts, you know, until things get a little crazy in the end. It's pretty dark and pretty heavy. And so, yeah, if it had leaned into some of that kind of craziness, I wonder if it would be a bigger hit than it already is, you know?
Yeah, and the attempts to try and do that, like some of the comedy in this thing didn't really work for me. Like, you know, God bless Jesse T. Usher, but no. Like, I just don't buy him in movies. I'm sorry. The Kyle Gallner trying to hit on Sosie Bacon and the nurse just being like, I'm single or something like that. It's like too little at that point. I really need just like some straight up like goofiness. And that's kind of part of what Lights Out is doing too. Like really go for it with the gimmick.
You know, they didn't let Cal Penn be funny at all. You know?
Yeah, that was.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah. Which I mean, cool, you know, playing against type, and he really does show that he cares. Like, it's a very sincere role for him until, you know, he fucking peels his own face off or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my last piece, and this is another one that's not a movie, but it's just, I guess you would just say it's more of an observation, but I don't know when this movie, when they got started on production on it. I know you said that it's partially at least inspired by his own short film that he had worked on a few years back, but it seems like the perfect time to make a movie about seeing people's creepy smiles right after the COVID mask. All of us having to wear masks has kind of gone away for the most part. You know, the pandemic's still ongoing, of course, but nobody's wearing masks anymore. After 2 years of not seeing people's faces, not seeing people's smiles, and to come back to creepy fucking smiles, I feel it's kind of a little bit of a genius act here, and kind of goes along with the marketing of the movie as well, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, this idea that, I mean, you could play it off as like a smile is supposed to be warm, it's supposed to be inviting, and it feels like our country is anything but at the moment. Yes. Like, we're all like still duking it out with each other just because we're able to go out and hang out at the movies and go see concerts, and like some of our favorite bands are coming back. It doesn't mean everything's hunky-dory. We still got, you know, fascists trying to remove reproductive rights, and we still got people that legitimately believe Agent Orange needs to run again in 24, and just like, it's still a scary place out there. So the idea of like turning something that should be liberating, like us removing the mask, being able to see the full like joy in our faces, realizing what's underneath isn't what you expected or wanted. That's I didn't think about that as like a cultural thing, but I'm kind of into it. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a weird time these last couple years, you know, and it's like, it seemed like we would never see each other's faces again for a while. And now we do. And maybe it's a little weird seeing each other, you know, it plays into the film's favor, I think.
Have you caught yourself, because there was like a feeling, and it wasn't just, I think partially media did this, but there was this feeling that like, yeah, we would never see us do this again, or this is the new normal, you have to get into it. Once things started kind of going back to normal, I don't know how it is over there in Vegas, but like in Texas, it legitimately, like, everybody's sort of back to normal, and people walk in and pick up their, I work at a pharmacy, people go in and pick up their COVID medications like they're picking up the cold meds or the flu meds. It's almost like it's very easy for us to return back to where we were, like pretending like millions of people didn't just die from this fucking pandemic thing and are still dying from it. And we don't have that great of a grasp on it yet. We're getting better, but we don't have a great of a grasp on it. But I guess the ease of our minds to return to normal, or like the desire to return to normal, and how easy for it is to go from like a thing that we actively go for to something that we just kind of passively slide back into. That shift for me has been weird.
Not to get too deep into it, but like, I feel like a lot of people, they just need that. Like, they simply can't go on without things going back to normal, you know? And so even if it's not time yet, it just kind of has to be, and for better or worse. I mean, I had some sniffles yesterday, and first thing I did, went and got a COVID test. And like, when will I not have to do that? You know, when can it just be sniffles? You know what I mean? It's like, it's weird.
I mean, I've been sick with this thing since Tuesday, and that's what I had to do too. Just like go in the cabinet. Because, you know, you don't immediately diagnose yourself with COVID. I did it. I found myself just going like, all right, well, it's the, you know, time of the year again where my allergies come back to bite me or whatever. And that's what it is, because I took a test and I'm totally fine. But like that additional weight of grabbing a COVID test, it's that weird like regression back into the fear of it all. And even though like I am vaccinated and boosted, and like likely the virus would affect me in a much milder way than normal, there's still that paranoia that kind of lingers on there, and just it's a weird fucking time, man. It's heavy,
never going away. But do we have any closing thoughts on Smile, anything we didn't quite get into?
I didn't know she was Kevin Bacon's daughter until after
I didn't
the
either.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And then like when you see it, like once you hear it, it's like immediate, like, oh, she totally looks like her dad. But I didn't know that one. And I really, even though I'm not like a big fan of Smile, I really do want better, good things for Parker Finn. I think as he's got like an interesting idea here, this whole dealing with your mental trauma and how that affects everybody around you through this demonic thing. Like, that's just great horror storyteller, like fodder, you know, that if your brain naturally goes there, I'm already with you. And I think he has a solid grasp on tension, and his influences are everywhere, from like The Shining to something like, obviously, It Follows. Like, the guy's got a good grasp on what makes horror work. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to what he's got next.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about it earlier, but like, my only other thing would be just to kind of reiterate, you know, some of the things surrounding this movie are some of the most exciting parts. That killer trailer, all of the weird marketing things they did at like baseball games and all that stuff. I hope Hollywood and filmmakers in general continue to do stuff like that. It really just brings a little bit of excitement back. I mean, everything is just so kind of sanded off a little bit, you know, especially to bring COVID back up. But, you know, since these last couple of years of the pandemic, like, everything is just so, you know, down. We need more fun like that. And I love that they were able to pull all this stuff off with this movie. Even if the movie, you know, like you said, it's not like a favorite of the year or anything like that, but like, I had a lot of fun with it. And part of that does go to everything around the movie itself.
I think you're right. Yeah, there's this fear, especially nowadays, that movies are sort of becoming disposable. You know, they're reducing the theatrical, the DVD window, and there's been this like doom and gloom about the theatrical experience going away. And it's just like taking, you know, these aren't like Times Square size billboards for Smile. You know, these are really simple little gimmicks that just happen to catch the right eyes at the right time. So you don't have to do a lot to make your movie really feel like an event anymore. And I think that's one of the boons of social media and technology, is that you're able to really spark a great, you know, big firestorm of like impressions from something that's like a really simple idea. So you know, if this movie has a place in 2022, it's just kind of reminding you that like the Vincent Castle showmanship is not gone away. And I don't think it ever will, and God forbid it ever should or does.
Absolutely. Well, Daniel, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
X. I'm about to cover that on the podcast. And that movie, I came into it late, but I remember watching it, feeling good on it. And then I'm driving in the car and I'm thinking more about it. And then I'm at home in the shower and I'm thinking more about it. And I'm hanging out with my kid and I'm thinking more about it. So that's a movie and a phenomenon. Like, speaking of like stuff that's going on in 2022, the fact that Ty West is able to like unravel this trilogy of horror movies and really get people into it and make some decent money off of that, that's exciting too. Absolutely. So yeah, X is a movie. If you haven't seen it and you're like a fan of Texas Chainsaw, and you just, if you're like a fan of Texas Chainsaw with sort of the approach of something like Hereditary, just slightly off kilter, a little bit more character based, really willing to go into the grime. That's a fucking grimy, like dirty movie. Not sure, not for explicitly like what happens in it, but like just the feeling. Like, you never feel safe in that film.
Yeah.
X is great.
Yeah, it's an exciting year for horror, that's for sure.
But, damn straight.
Great stuff. Tell people where they can find you and your podcast.
I'm on I'm on Spotify, I'm on Apple Podcasts, I'm on pretty much everywhere as just The Movies. Self-explanatory podcast. It's the place where I get to do my movie diary and just rant about the world. You can follow me on Twitter at @themovies_pod. I've just released my own review of Smile, if you want to hear me go a little bit more in different tangents about that. And like I just mentioned, I'm going to drop my episode on X starting Monday. So Monday would be October 10th. So this episode might come out then or there before, but you know, time doesn't exist in a COVID land. So
that is absolutely right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to that Smile episode, and yeah. Hey, thank you so much for being back on the show, and hopefully we'll get you back again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. It's been fun.
He's Johnny.
And he's Darren.
Do you like movies?
Do you like your childhood?
Do you like movies from your childhood?
Do you like podcasts about movies from your childhood?
If you answered yes to one or all those questions, then you might enjoy NostalgiaCast. It's a podcast about movies from your childhood.
So if you're nostalgic for nostalgia, then you might like NostalgiaCast. See, that's the name of our podcast, NostalgiaCast.
Yeah, I think they got that.
Should we sign off?
Let's do it. I'm Johnny.
And he's Darren.
And this is
NostalgiaCast.
I win.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Smile. Thanks to Daniel for being on the episode. Make sure to check out his episode about Smile. And thank you to you for listening. If you enjoy what we do here on Piecing It Together, make sure you're subscribed wherever it is that you're listening or wherever your favorite podcast app is. Also, the Discover Pods Best Podcast Award thing just opened up. And if you really like the show, maybe go drop us a nomination over there. That would be really awesome if you did that. But of course, the number one thing is just keep on listening. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about our Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, as well as from Awesome Movie Year and from my music career. I am currently working on two new albums, and I will be posting another sneak peek on the Patreon later this week. And a new Awesome Movie Year bonus episode just hit the Patreon on A Few Good Men, so there's that over there, as well as a bunch of Piecing It Together episodes. And I mentioned Barbarian on this episode. That Piecing It Together is on the Patreon, so it'll eventually hit the main feed, but you can check it out now. So that is what's going on. Let's close this out with a piece of music, as we always do. And it is the Halloween season, the spooky season. I gotta play something kind of creepy sounding. So, you know, I'm actually going to go with a piece of music. I have this folder on my hard drive just filled with, like, creepy tracks that I never released in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know what, if anything, I'll ever do with them. Some of them I might not even be able to, like, reopen and touch up and, like, make them finish. They just exist as demos, and that's all I'll ever be able to do with them. This is one of those such songs, so it's a pretty cool track. Maybe by ear I could recreate it one day and like make a new version or something, because it's from way back in 2013 and I'm not going to release it in its current state. But it is pretty cool, and so let's play it to close out the episode, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.